Have you ever seen an ancient structure and you wondered, oh, how did this happen? Who made this? In a moment, Jim Vieira joins us. We're going to be talking about stone structures, ancient civilizations, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Let me tell you about Jim Vieira. He's a writer, researcher, stonemason from Massachusetts, a member of the Northeast Antiquities Research Association, contributes to the Shelburne Falls Independence and the national publication, which is called the Ancient American Magazine. Jim, welcome. How are you?
Thank you, George. I appreciate you having me.
Whereabouts in Massachusetts are you? Mom was born in Pittsburgh.
Oh, really? I grew up in Boston, and I went to UMass about 20 years ago, and now I live in a small town in western Mass called Ashfield.
I used to go up there for the summer, Jim, all the time. Just loved it.
Yeah, it's really nice up there.
Great town. How'd you get interested in ancient structures and stone structures?
I'm a stonemason by trade, and about 20 years ago, my brother and I were hiking out in the woods here in the forest, and we kept finding strange stone structures that just stuck with me, like an undulating serpent wall in the Holly State Forest, for instance. In the last seven stones, it's built up on a 20-foot glacial erratic. And you have seven stones that are chalked up on both sides, supported, joined on vertical planes, probably about a ton apiece. And then you get to the last stone, and it literally has the shape of a serpent's head with a carved eye and iris. And I just remember staring at it, and I'm like, what the hell is that? That doesn't make any sense in a colonial context. And I started to find other structures. And then I ran into a book called Manitou by Jim Maver and Byron Dix, to well-known researchers who studied and made a really strong case for Native American stone ruins existing in New England. I'll quickly say that Maver created the submersible. He was a lead architect in the submersible sub Alvin.
Well, okay, I remember that.
Yes, so he was a brilliant engineer. He taught architecture for the Navy, and Byron Dix was a optical engineer with many patents and was able to calculate astronomical orientations of a lot of sites in New England also. So I really said, oh, the pieces click together. I'm like, you know, and then I started to delve more into, studying ancient America and all the Native American structures, and realized there are structures of earth and stone thousands of years old in like every part of the United States. And it really astounded me because I had never learned about these things in school.
It must have fascinated you, huh?
Yes, yes, it really just lit my mind up. It was amazing.
And did you find that when you looked at one, it kind of opened up the door to another one, and you just kept going that way?
Absolutely. Like, I'd go to sites, and I'd talk to the landowner. Honestly, I was just guided to a lot of places. I'd climb one mountain, I'd get to the top and find a balance rock, and I'd see that it was pointing at another mountain. And I'd walk down, and then the next day I'd talk to the landowner and say, hey, do you mind if I check your property? He said, oh, yeah, the previous landowner said that there was an old native burial ground up there. And I'd go up there, and there's 100 stone mounds that are beautifully built, 5 foot high, that are not farmers' clearing piles. And it was like, wow, And to date, I found over 10,000 stone mounds around just Massachusetts alone. And the Northeast Antiquities Research Association is kind of a clearinghouse for all this information of carbon dates and artifact finds and historical accounts of pre-colonial stonework in New England.
I used to have a farm near Springfield, Illinois, and people would come up and ask me if they could go arrowhead hunting. And I didn't even know what that was at the time, Jim. But I'd say, sure. And apparently they'd then go and find, and boy, I learned it the hard way, they would find Native American arrowheads all over the place. I mean, those things must have been worth something.
Oh, absolutely.
They gave away. Hundreds of them.
They were probably Adena sites or Adena. There are three classifications of the mound builders or descriptions of different periods. The Adena were the oldest, and they were based in the Ohio River Valley. Then there was the Hopewell and the Mississippian, and they built different structures, and they kind of overlapped, but not a lot is known about them. But yeah, Illinois, an interesting one is Warren K. Moorhead, the Dean of American Archaeology, reported on a 55-foot stone mound, 180-foot base that was in Illinois, that the colonists took apart to build roadways and all kinds of bridges. And he reported tens of thousands of cartloads of stone taken to destroy this essentially stone pyramid in Illinois.
Oh, my gosh.
Which was, and he derided, you know, the colonists. But that's happened in New England, too. Well, a lot of these sites, the colonists would come in. There was no, like, respect or celebration of Native culture. So they went in and they hit the most easily accessible stone, you know, stones to take apart for whatever purposes, not really understanding what they were doing, you know.
Jim, the ancient cultures, did they have, do you think, high technology?
I think what you see, you see artifacts that, you know, certainly speak to metallurgy. I've seen skulls with pictures of skulls with drill holes that appear to from the Native American mounds that appear to show brain surgery. You have geometry and mathematics in the earthworks that are really astounding, like at the Newark Bradley Lepper, the curator for the archaeologist for the Ohio Archaeological Institute. He studied the Newark earthworks and figured out there was a road that connected a circle and octagon, a 20 and 50 acre geometric form that was a Masonic cycle or an eclipse predictor that measured the 18.61 Masonic cycle of the moon. And there was a 55 mile road of earthen walls, 190 feet wide, that went to Chillicothe, Ohio, where another Masonic calendar existed. And which you had all over the eastern half of ancient America. It was like geometric forms, earthen pyramids. It was like a college geometric blackboard of astounding proportions that nobody really knows about. It's just amazing stuff. At Cahokia.
Cahokia Mounds, I've been there.
Yes, yeah, 100 foot high, 14-acre base, 1 acre larger than the Great Pyramid, 22 million cubic yards of earth brought from over a mile away to create the structure. And they found when there was a mudslide was weakening one of the corners, I think in the 90s, and they drilled down and they found 32 feet deep. They found this massive stone chamber inside.
Like an upside down base or something, wasn't it?
Yes, and they obviously can't get in there and see what's in there, but you know it also makes you wonder who is creating these things, but what kind of society is creating such staggering and geometrically perfect things? It's really the math and geometry that you see is really quite astounding. And we're told, you know, part of the racist paradigm was that Native American civilizations were disorganized, nomadic, savage, didn't have a real grasp of the arts and the sciences, which is total nonsense. All around the country, you find just the star cities, you know, Gary David's work of the Hopi and the Anasazi.
They're everywhere.
They're everywhere, yeah. Hub and Weep, Chaco Canyon, you go there, and as a stonemason, I'm like, you know, it's easy to sit in your office and talk about, oh, they could have done this way or that way, but you go there, and it is astounding. And frankly, school children are taught that Native Americans took part in basically no stonework. And the Hopewell and the Edina, and where you used to live in Illinois, there were stone-walled forts, some, you know, Spruce Hill, Fort Ancient, these massive, like 200-acre massive wall complexes, you know, and we never heard of them. I guess that's what got under my skin is, like, why aren't school children taught about these amazing accomplishments of past civilizations?
These structures, as a stonemason, Jim, how would you say how they constructed it or the accuracy of what they did?
It's really difficult. Christopher Dunn actually wrote an article. Christopher, who, you know, he's
Giza power plant.
Yes, exactly. And he talked about almost having to have a drafting board and a real intricate knowledge of mathematics in a written language to build some of certainly the earthen and geometric forms.
Yeah, you couldn't have built this with one guy saying to others, do this, do that, right? You have to have a plan, I would guess.
Yes, exactly. That's one thing that, you're familiar with Puma Punku, and I talked to a lot of stonemasons. We all have quite an interest in that place. And it's like, you know, why aren't archaeologists compelled to explain that away? You know, you could sit there for 3,000 years with copper chisels, and you could never duplicate that. You need advanced mathematics. You need, I don't know, a diamond-tipped CNC machine. It is just astounding.
So, what do you think? To speculate for a second, then, Jim. Let's assume all this is correct, that you just couldn't do it conventionally. What do you think they had, and how did they have it?
You know, I think, why are the oldest stone ruins all around the planet the most intricate, largest, you know, sophisticatedly built and mind-boggling? And then, you know, if we're progressing Darwin style, the way we're told, it should be in reverse. Why are the many pyramids supposedly built around the time of the Great Pyramid piles of dust right now? And while that, you know, stands in geometric perfection, I just think it might have to do with, to be a little esoteric, you know, a science that's blended with spirituality that doesn't exist in our culture now, you know.
It's gone.
That we only perceive 5% of the electromagnetic spectrum, and, you know, the realms of shamans and mystics are outside of our grasp because we've kind of lost the spiritual connection to science, which I think will come back. But right now, we're you know, it's pretty obvious where our science is at. It's really cold and rigid and exclusive of the spiritual side, which I think is a mistake, obviously. And that, I just think you tap into something else, and I can't claim to know what technology was used, but there's no question there was a global maritime civilization over 10,000 years old. I cannot fathom how all these structures got built without a high advanced society. You know,
I agree. But what about the equipment? What do you think they might have had?
That's funny. It's a question that's never been posed to me about the work in the United States.
I've baffled you, Jim.
Yeah, you have that. That's a first. You shut me up. That's a good thing.
No, well, don't do that. You're on a radio show.
No, I really, I think...
Nobody wants to hear me sing and dance.
I would imagine, it's funny. I was just watching an Edgar Cayce special about the mound builders.
Mm-hmm.
And he had 68 readings, and he talked about the mound builders, you know, where they came from, and actually originating from Atlantis. He said that they came up from the Yucatan, and they started in Poverty Point, Louisiana. I'm sorry, Watson Break in around 3400 BC, and they were avoiding the death cults that were happening, or the sacrificial population, you know, the things that were happening in Central America, and that they had an advanced knowledge of mathematics. You find one. I'll say this: at the Newark Circle, you find the 51.84 slope angle of the Great Pyramid and the azimuth angle that runs right through the middle of it. And there is the 187-foot grid patent found by James A. Marshall at Teotihuacan that you also find in many of the earthworks of ancient America. So to me, that means there is a shared school of engineering, mathematics, and geometry that go, you know, on both sides of the Atlantic, you have pi, right? You have the 51.84 slope angle built by pi in Giza, then Teotihuacan is built by 2 pi with a 43.5 angle instead of an obvious 45 degree angle.
Might it have been ET information?
You know, that one of the things I get into with all of researching is Native American oral history, what they say about races of giants, what they say about, you know, star ancestors. And, you know, I believe, you know, I tend to point to a global maritime civilization as the author or the constructor of a lot of sites that I see, but they seem to have been informed from star beings. That is something that I keep finding in Native history. And when I uncover thousands of reports of giant skeletons in ancient America, and then I know all these tribes all over the country that believe or that specifically talk about a race of giants, it gets me thinking. You know, they start talking about many other things too, interdimensional existences and star beings and the Pleiades, and it really gets you thinking, like, what the hell is going on? You know, what I've done is search through historical texts for observational reports of people from all walks of life to try to piece together history, because what we are told about history is obviously this story that is created as a way to control the population, or, you know, for the winning team, whatever. And I really have started just to look at these observational reports. You know, when a colonist shows up and reports stone ruins existing, you know, before the colonists were here, you take notice. You're like, what does that mean? You know, there seems to be a lot of evidence in our historical accounts about what happened that get ignored. The archaeologists, the anthropologists, and historians do not dive back into the historical accounts, mm-hmm. found histories.
Any tie-in with the Egypt?
In the United States?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's funny that there's a story, it's reported in the 1903, I think, or the 1908 Phoenix Gazette about a researcher who found in the Grand Canyon, he found giants in a cave with incredible artifacts, hieroglyphs, and the Smithsonian, I think his name was Professor Jordan, if I'm mistaken, David Hatcher Childress reported about it, but they later said that, oh, he wasn't a professor of ours, but there's this long story that talks about this incredible find he has, and now it's a no-fly zone in the Grand Canyon, and a lot of the area has names of Egyptian places, of the, you know, the Tower of Isis and
That's
stuff like
right.
that.
Isn't that strange?
Yeah, yeah, and a pilot talked about, it's a no-fly zone. It's much more secure than your average no-fly zone. You cannot land there as a pilot in an emergency. And there were reports of people getting close there and coming back and reporting wild things. I just really...
What are they hiding, Jim?
Oh, evidence of advanced civilizations, of, you know, once an institution stakes out a position, right? Yeah, and we know in our society, you know, they don't... The cover-up is much worse than the crime. They don't self-correct or self-reflect. They're always dragged to the confessional. So you know, is the Smithsonian going to say, excuse me, you know, for 100 years we've been hiding evidence on giant skeletons?
I'm going to talk with you about skeletons in a moment after the break, but why would they hide the high-technology evidence? To me, it would be great, but, I mean, did something happen? Did maybe they all nuke each other thousands of years ago, and they don't want to scare us? Why would they hide it?
Yes, it's one of these things, like, you know, you go into Iraq and because, you know, you're sitting around a boardroom and Dick Cheney's saying we're running out of oil, so we have to, we got to get ourselves, you know, it's when money and power are involved, people do things believing that's for the will of the people, and they'll do devious things, and they'll cover up information. We really, at this point in our society, in the United States, is really, we're in lockdown mode. It's really a difficult and totalitarian place to be, and the evidence of things that, I guess, I'll state it like this. The system doesn't like to be challenged anywhere across the board. It doesn't want anybody to find its weak link, you know? So anytime somebody comes out and starts to say things or show evidence, you know, a lot of times things will be suppressed. You know, Nikola Tesla's free energy devices, wireless transmission of energy. If I told you I have an electromagnetic cure for cancer and diabetes, and it's virtually painless and free, and, you know.
Well, that's the key, Jim, free. We're coming back. Let's talk about these giant skeletons next. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. And our guest tonight, Jim Vieira, we're going to come back in just a moment as we talk about stone structures, ancient civilizations, and what about giant skeletons? Oh, boy, that's next on Coast to Coast AM. Jim, tell me about these giant skeletons that you've been researching.
Could I talk about my TEDx talk for a second?
Well, what about the TEDx talk?
I did a TEDx talk a couple weeks ago in Shelburne Falls.
And explain that to people who don't know what that is.
A TEDx is a... the original idea was TED Talks. I think it started in California in the 90s. But it's basically 10 and 15 minute talks that a series of speakers give that's broadcast at the main site. And all around the globe, these talks happen. Deepak Chopra, lots of luminaries have given talks, and it's just an exchange of new ideas. So the woman who ran had seen one of my lectures, who ran the Shelburne Falls one. She asked me to present. So I gave a 15-minute talk called Stone Builders, Mound Builders, and the Giants of Ancient America. It ended up being, it became a viral hit over a couple weeks. It had 120,000 views, the number one most watched TEDx in the world for the last month, and they took it down a couple days ago.
Why?
They gave 8 reasons why, and I've responded to them, and I'm going to submit it back to them. I guess I have a Facebook page, Stone Builders, Mound Builders, and the Giants of Ancient America.
Right, we got that linked up for you.
Yes, yeah, so I'll post it there. And
Did you commit atrocities? What did they say?
Well, I end by saying that I am not advocating a risky and unproven health cure. Essentially, all I did was read through historical accounts in the Smithsonian's own reports, the New York Times, the leading archaeologists and scientists of the day, talking about the giant skeleton finds that they uncovered. And so that was my crime, I guess. And that's not an idea worth sharing. So that was the main beef they had.
Wow.
Yes.
And they bounced you because of that.
It's unprecedented. And the number one watched TEDx in the world, 120,000 views, and like 1,400 likes. And the 100 dislikes were mostly trolls and professional skeptics. You know, they weren't even humans.
Right.
And
yeah, they're out there. I've got a few.
So
robot people.
Yes. So like an algorithm, not even
with no lives. They
so,
just sit on, they just sit on the internet. That's all they do every day.
Oh, no. I think there are. Abby Martin on the RT channel did a special on trolls, and there are paid agents.
You know, a lot of them are haters. You know, I call them, they're losers, as far as I'm concerned. They don't have anything to do.
You know, really just trying to tear people down. You know, like,
They don't like themselves. They don't like life. They don't like anything. You know, if you could really, I want to do a show on this. You know, people who hide behind these internet things, and you know, you find that you know, these people are either I don't want to get into it.
Yeah, well, I say, and I'm sure you agree, is that we should encourage the study of anomalies. You know, how did Einstein disprove
I agree,
you know, Newton's theory with the help of Eddington, you know, taking a picture of an eclipse in Africa? Anomaly by you know, understanding Newton's anomaly and figuring it out, and study anomalies. How was this done? And instead of protecting everything at every turn, people are sick of being intellectually bullied, you know? And, I'm with you.
All right, let's get into the skeletons.
Okay. So,
what did you research that was so controversial?
Yes, I guess, I have the Devil's Bible in front of me. I went to get my son a sub, and I went down to the library and picked up the Town History of Deerfield, Massachusetts, 1895, by the eminent historian George Sheldon. Sheldon was one of the first preservationists in the country. He's a demigod at prestigious Deerfield Academy. My brother encouraged me to pick up Town Histories to look for reports of old stonework in New England, of like John Winthrop writes, the governor of the founder of Springfield writes the governor of Connecticut and says, we just showed up at Gunjiwamp, 1654, and we found the strange stone fort and stone walls and reports like that, you know, Indian stone mounds, they were called, and Indian stone houses. And so I was very interested. And I'm reading through the history of Deerfield. And on page 78, it says, one of these skeletons, well, at the foot of Barr's Long Hill, it describes what was found. One of these skeletons was described to me by Henry Mather, who saw it, as being of monstrous size, the head as big as a peck basket, with double teeth all around. Mather, who's about 6 feet tall, made the comparison and says the thigh bones were about 3 inches longer than his own. The skeleton was examined by Dr. Stephen Williams, who said the owner must have been at least 8 feet high. So I said, double rows of teeth, 8 feet high, and it just, you know, it just stuck with me. Like, what does that even mean? And so I started to read other town histories, and I found the town history of Middleborough. The skeleton was measured by Dr. Morrill Robertson and others. This is 1906, page 400. It was found to have a double row of teeth in each jaw. The height must have been at least 7'8". Town history of Rockingham, Vermont. The jawbone was of such large size that a man could easily slip it over his face, and the teeth, which were all double, were perfect. And then on and on. The story of Martha's Vineyard. An unusual feature was a complete row of double row of teeth on both the upper and lower jaws. So I started to find giant skeletons, 7, 8 feet tall, sometimes 9 feet tall, in the town histories of New England with anatomic anomalies like double rows of teeth, massive jawbones, and it keeps the observational report is the finder picks up the jawbone, fits it like a mask over their face, or takes the skull and fits it completely over their head. And I'm not talking about 6'3", sometimes 9, 10, 11 foot skeletons.
Any indication how they may have died?
A lot of times they were in burial mounds, frankly. The Grave Creek mounds, 68.
I mean, were they stabbed, attacked?
There are indications of peaceful burials, and there are indications of wars and of Scientific American, 100 acres of giant bones found. And you say, oh, my God, how could that even be? How can that many bones be found and, you know, not be, you know, stored anywhere? Or, you know, that I'll get into that part of the story also, but it's amazing. There are thousands of these accounts, many with anatomic anomalies, which is a key to this mystery, of massive jawbones and double rows of teeth. It's like that is not extra supernumerary teeth, but a complete double rows of teeth are described by doctors, scientists, anthropologists, archaeologists, farmers, and over decades and decades of time all around the country. It's astounding.
Weren't they cannibals?
Well, there are different. Like the Paiute Indians talk about the Lovelock Cave giants, and there seem to be giants among the spiritual and warrior class of the Native Americans who were buried in copper armor with copper crowns and thousands of pearls and amazing burials that you find at Grave Creek, Spiro Mounds in Oklahoma, ceremonial structures. But then there's like a freak show cannibal side where you have, you know, like red hair giants, and it sounds all laughable, but Native American Sarah Winnemucca talks about the 9 foot giants that they burned in a cave, and then David Hatchett Childress is at the Humboldt Museum on the History Channel showing the giant skulls, and there's a report here of the Smithsonian
getting what?
Yes. At Lovelock Ranch, a mummy known as a Lovelock giant. Many stories, let's see. The truth is that the figure with the reddish hair on the skull was 9.5 feet in length. The mummy is now at the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C. It is the largest human specimen ever recovered. That is from the Nevada State Journal.
No, they're not. They're not displaying that thing, I bet.
Oh, no, God. No, I have report after report of the Smithsonian scientists showing up. Remains shipped back to the Smithsonian, you know, anatomic anomalies, 8 and 9 foot tall. I have New York Times headlines, all kinds of reports of prehistoric man, 8 feet tall, Smithsonian Institution to determine age of skeleton found in Ohio. Spokane Daily Chronicle, February 16th, 1924. Burial mound of giant race holds secret. Thighs and skulls sent to the Smithsonian. St. Petersburg Daily Times, March 17th, 1914. Skull, you know, on and on. American Antiquary, 9'2", shipped to the Smithsonian. Could I read one thing for a second?
As long as it's not too long.
Okay. The Smithsonian, this is a guy who talks about the giant axe, and he said, some years ago when the Colonel Ben Smith mound was opened by Professor Norris of the Smithsonian, he found the skeleton of a giant which measured 7'8" in length. And then he goes on to talk about an axe that he found. So then I go back and I find the New York Times article 15 years earlier that shows that Norris uncovered the giant skeleton. So it's like all these accounts are in the New York Times. They're in the Smithsonian's own ethnology reports. How do you explain it?
Well, how do you?
I can get into that story if you want. The first director of the Division of Anthropology for the Smithsonian was named Alex Hedrickla.
What year?
1903, he started, and his reign of terror is well known. He was a real piece of work. He called Louis Leakey a heretic to his face. He said, Nobody existed in the United States before 4,000 years ago. And this is a couple of his quotes. The greatest danger before, I'm sorry how repulsive these are, but he was a pre-Nazi eugenist. The greatest danger before the American people today is the blending of the Negro tenth of the population into the superior blood of the white race. Science Newsletter, Volume 13, 1928, page 21.
Another sicko guy, huh?
Absolutely. In 1927, he endorsed a comparison of African babies with young apes. And on and on and on. He was, and he had a...
And how long did this guy keep his job?
Oh, no, no. He was like the king of anthropology for the Smithsonian, 20, 30 years.
Unbelievable. Should have been fired on the spot.
Yeah, instead he retired with honors. He was, and he led the charge. He's the one who proclaimed giants no more. And he talked about, he said, because all these reports were in the Smithsonian's own ethnology reports. I have tons of 7 and 8 foot skeletons that they found before his tenure. There were no denials of giant skeletons before Hydrickola was in charge. And he bullied and marginalized all these reports. And so when an anthropologist and archaeologist is presented with my evidence, they say, you're out of your mind. I've read thousands of accounts of 5'6" and 5'8" skeletons. This is all nonsense. But I say, the textbooks are censored of these reports by guys like Hydrickola, acting for an arm of establishment who wanted to paint a picture of Native Americans as unsophisticated, uninspiring, and just, you know.
Well, Jim, are you familiar with the Bible and the Nephilim, the giants?
I have become. I'm a recovering Catholic.
All right. I'm wondering if this is one and the same, if these giants that people are uncovering might be the Nephilim from, you know, the book of Genesis.
I think so. I mean, I know there's been a lot of really good Mormon archaeology in the United States. And it's funny, if you have a BYU professor in geology, he's a genius. If he gets into archaeology and tries to go against the grain of you know, conventional archaeology, he's a wacko. But I know that there are a lot of people that you know, are religious, who have studied the Bible and other historical texts, and yeah, they talk about the Nephilim. I think there are so many accounts, you know, like Moses sent out scouts, I believe, in the talks about in the Bible, and they came back and said, you know, we were as grasshoppers in this site. And once again, it's just like town histories, observational reports. You're not asking somebody for their philosophical or religious views. You're saying, what do you see right in front of you? And this is not a phenomenon, you know, solely in the United States. It's around the world. So thousands of years ago, there were giants. There's no question about it. It's not Jack and the Beanstalk. It's like burial mounds with the giants being unearthed by some of the leading archaeologists like Warren K. Moorhead, the Dean of American Archaeology, found giant skeletons in Pennsylvania, Illinois, and Connecticut, among other places. It's just like astounding that this isn't known.
That is astounding. And in terms of the evidence, how many skeletons are we talking about?
Thousands. I mean, I have 500 newspaper clippings describing different, you know, dozens of skeletons sometimes, one or two. Oftentimes going back to the Smithsonian for observation, for, you know, investigation. The Smithsonian actively went around the country, and there are many well-documented accounts where they would meet the townspeople, shake hands, take pictures, or I don't know, you know, in the 1800s, slapping backs and taking the giant skeletons away, and never to be seen again. And it seems like... There is an active cover-up of all this evidence. And, it's disconcerting because there's so much of it, and it's like, wow, they've really sealed the door on the past of ancient America and the giant skeletons, not being around to be observed now, and for people not even to know about them. Now it's like the guy who presents the information is a kook, you know, but all I'm doing is pointing to town records, town history, historical accounts.
Are there giants found in other countries on the planet, Jim?
Absolutely. 1719 Stonehenge, 9'2" unearthed. Burial mounds at Stonehenge, 7-footers. I have a picture of the burial mound in a hand-engraved picture of the mound that the skeleton came out of. Same thing, same kind of reports as in New England or the United States. We 1783. We're digging a foundation, and they unearth an 8-foot skeleton with strange cranial features.
Why suppress that knowledge? What are they afraid of?
Yeah, it's funny because I can really make a strong case in the United States. Like, you know, they want to suppress all evidence of, you know, a race that calls attention to itself. You know, you cannot celebrate a culture and destroy it at the same time. So in the United States, you have, you know, ancient America was like Greek mythology. You had giants in armor, in copper armor, with copper crowns and pearls and geometric forms and pyramids, just amazing stuff. And you could make the case they're just trying to, you know, bury that. But on a it's like a global phenomena. So there is this concerted effort. Yeah, I really just think it's troubling, is what it is, because it really makes you think, like, how active is the control of information in our society, you know, and how pervasive.
If they were that big, are there any, you know, structures that are that big, doorways that are that big? You know, I always remember when I went to Cancun, the doorways were really small. So I assume the people were really small. Are we finding huge passageways?
That's a good question. I know, like Petra in Jordan, the legend is it was built by giants, and that the doorways are astoundingly high there. And Pumapunku, I think the gate, not the gate, at Tiwanaku, I think one of the gates is that, you know, I know down in South and Central America, there are carved reliefs of the bearded giants who were the civilizers who showed up, Kukulkan, Quetzalcoatl, that I think some of the huge and astounding structures in South and Central America, you know, with many legends of giants associated with them, you know, could be what you're talking about.
Well, you never know. You never know. This goes all the way back to the biblical days. Maybe
absolutely. And one thing I found is there was an association with giants. You know, Stonehenge is called the Giant's Dance. You know, did the Incas say they built the walls of Sacsayhuaman? No, the legends say a race of giants came. The Aymara Indians don't say they built Pumapunku. They said beings from a lost civilization in the middle of the Atlantic came after a cataclysmic flood. In Egypt, the oral indigenous history of the Egyptians does not say they built the pyramids. They essentially say from a lost civilization west into the Atlantic. The same kinds of, you know, you hear these oral traditions all around the planet. And one thing about oral history, it's funny, I found that I've been studying native history around the country and finding that they've predicted, you know, tsunami frequency in the past for the 3,500 years, proven by a Washington professor. Where I live, the Pocumtuck Indians knew about the geologic record of Lake Hitchcock in Mount Sugarloaf over 10,000 years ago. I talked to a geoscience professor at UMass, and she said there was habitation sites to go back 11,500 years, and the Native Americans understood the geologic record first encountered in 1822 in the diary of Hitchcock, the first president of Amherst College. The Native Americans in Northampton told him about Lake Hitchcock, the petrified beaver. So what you have is oral history being verified by science.
All right, we're going to come back in a moment, Jim. We're going to take some phone calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM.